Romeinje, 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 Romeinje.
You're listening to Shtetl on the Shortwave on CKUT 90.3 FM. I'm your host, Tamara Kramer, and Shtetl is a Yiddish word that means small town or community. Shtetl on the Shortwave is a radio show about Jewish arts and culture in Montreal. Stay tuned today. We've got Daniel Isaiah Schachter and Black Sabbath. In a
Doch geht, bin kein Geiges, weiß man nicht. Wein trinkt man liberal, wenn verweist man Kaschkawal. Ei, digge, 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 dumm. Ei, digge, 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 dumm. Ei, digge, 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 dumm. Ei, digge, 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 dumm. In Rumänien ist doch geht, bin kein Sorgen, weiß man nicht. Norme singt und Norme rät, wenn verweist ein Kastravet. Ei, digge, 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 dumm. Ei, digge, 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 dumm. Ei, digge, 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 dumm. Ei, digge, 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 dumm.
Welcome to the last show of Shtetl on the Shortwave for 2010. We have a show that's all about music for you today. We've got Daniel Isaiah Schachter. He is born and raised in Montreal, and he's an up-and-coming musician here on the indie folk pop rock music scene. He played at Oceaga this summer, which is no small feat. It's a really huge festival here in Montreal. He's also a filmmaker, and we're going to talk about his music and about growing up Jewish in Montreal. You can hear him live on December 26th playing at Casa del Popolo, and you can hear him live talking here on Shtetl on the Shortwave on the second half of the show. But first, we're going to be talking with Black Sabbath. Not that Black Sabbath, though. We're going to be looking at the musical history of Jews and Blacks in American music recording history. There's an exhibit happening at the Contemporary Jewish Museum in San Francisco, and it's called Black Sabbath. I think for myself, when I think about the history of Blacks and Jews in music, the first thing that comes to mind is often Al Jolson, the Jewish jazz musician singing in blackface. But there's a lot more to the history than that. And the exhibit is curated by a group called the Idelson Society, and they claim to be the dumpster diving archivists of alternative, eclectic, and lost recordings of Jewish American music. And the show is all about that history. I spoke with Josh Kuhn. He is one of the members and founders of the Idelson Society, and he wrote the liner notes for the CD, because it is an exhibit, Black Sabbath, but it's also a CD and an app that you can download on your iPhone. So you can hear some of the highlights, some of the clips, audio clips, and even see some of the videos from the exhibit on your iPhone, or by going to IdelsonSociety.com and looking up the Black Sabbath exhibit on their website. So in this first clip, I talk with Josh Kuhn, and he told me a little bit about what the intentions were for the Black Sabbath exhibit.
You know, we wanted to use music to re-examine the well-trodden history of African Americans and American Jews, but we wanted to do it from a different angle, which is that when most people have written about and when scholars have researched that history, it more often than not, it comes back to the same sets of stories about American Jews' involvement in black music. And while those stories are so important and so urgent, they had been told. But we realized what hadn't really been told was the opposite story, which is the extent to which African American musicians were getting involved with Jewish music. And so we wanted to tell that story and kept finding these great examples, musical examples, of how that had happened. So instead of focusing and retelling the story of Jews in blackface, we wanted to tell the stories of, let's say, well, what were the black responses to Jews in blackface? What, you know, Cab Calloway in the 1930s singing in Yiddish and kind of doing his own imitations of the way that Jolson sang. Those were the kinds of stories that we got obsessed with.
So in this next clip, we're going to hear Cab Calloway singing Ata Zoy. He's most well known for his song Minnie the Moocher, but here he's singing in Yiddish.
My My mother used to sing to me a haunting little melody. Nobody knows where it came from or where it was composed. Did it a desire sings a tailor as he fashions pretty clothes. A desire sings a tailor as he sews and sews and sews. He's as busy as a bee, making lovely finery. Things my baby loves to wear when I take her to the fair. A desire sings a tailor, all it means is that the way. When I buy the things he made her, says the tailor, a desire.
Chop, chop, chop. Are you hip to this jive that I'm laying to you?
Snip, bip, dee-doo, dee-doo, scrap up, dee-doo, dee-doo, dang, 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 dee-da-da.
So in this next clip, Josh Kuhn tells us how Cab Calloway came to sing Yiddish tunes. And he also tells us about another very interesting musician who sang in a language that he called Voot or Vootaridi. And it's made up of, it's a kind of made up jive language that has a lot of different influences, maybe Japanese, Arabic, and definitely the occasional Yiddish influence as well.
Calloway was one of a handful of black artists in the 1930s who were exposed to Jewish music and, most importantly, to Yiddish language. And they were exposed to it really because of their encounters with Jewish musicians that they worked with, or in Cab's case, with his Jewish manager. And his manager really kind of introduced him to the wonderful world of, you know, of Yiddish, and the vernaculars of Yiddish started creeping into Cab's music. So there, we could have put about, I don't know, 10 different songs on the Black Sabbath album that included Cab dabbling in Yiddish, and you can actually hear most of those songs in the exhibit itself. So it's a pretty rich little period, and that's just the 1930s. Another person in that period who we feature on the record and we feature in the exhibit is a really wonderful guy by the name of Slim Galliard. And Slim not only sang with little bits of Yiddish mixed in with Spanish and Japanese, but he loved singing about Jewish food. So there's lots of really great matzo ball songs and the Meshuggah Mambo, which has lots of food references. And it's a really kind of surprising and rich world.
So this is Slim Galliard singing Dunkin' Bagel.
Coffee, Dunkin' Bagel, Dunkin' Bagel, Dunkin' Bagel. Splash in the coffee. Matzo ball, matzo ball to me.
A filter fish.
A filter fish a booty.
Pickle herring.
A pickle herring booty.
Lots of rooty.
Oh, lots of rooty.
Dunkin' Bagel, Dunkin' Bagel, Dunkin' Bagel.
Splash
in the coffee.
So in this next clip, I talked with Josh Kuhn, and I was telling him I was kind of amazed at how even with segregation, black and white Jewish musicians could have such a close relationship. And Josh talks about that in this clip and also about another very unexpected song on the Black Sabbath compilation.
Well, Jews and blacks were frequently, you know, by the time the 1930s and especially early 40s come around, you know, the swing era was crucially important to the integration, you know, to racial integration through popular music. And so more and more in the 30s, you had black artists and Jewish artists sharing the stage together. And in the case of a Cab Calloway, you know, again, his manager, Irving Mills, you know, who was Odessa-born, you know, Russian-Jewish immigrant, who wrote some, you know, some really important early jazz songs and wrote a lot of, you know, worked a lot in black music circles. So there was a lot of encounter kind of under the radar of mainstream segregation that really music was setting the bar for how cross-cultural exchange was going to happen.
Okay. And I wanted to ask you about Nina Simone. I was kind of surprised to hear that she was singing a Israeli classic folk song. How did that happen?
That's a tune that is definitely, it's amazing to hear. And actually in the exhibit and on the app, we've got some great footage of her performing that live on stage, when they were performing on that, she was performing it on Hootenanny on the TV show.
The TV show was called Hootenanny?
Yeah, it was a folk music program in the U.S., in the 1960s. And, she, you know, I don't know how she came to that song. It is not mentioned in any relevant detail in any of the biographies about her, including the new one, and her autobiography, she barely talks about it. So it's not clear how that song came to her, but my best guess is that you know, she was obviously so active in the village folk music scene, where international songs were a big part of the repertoire. And that folk song, which seems to be a classic song, but is actually pretty recent. It's a 1950s song that ended up in her hands. And she does it, just this really compelling version of the song, and then end up actually going to Israel to perform. I think it was basically another decade after that, where she was a huge hit in Israel. And it's still, again, not clear to me how much of her success in Israel had to do with her covering that song.
So now we're actually going to get to take a listen to Nina Simone singing in Hebrew. Unbelievable. And it is unbelievable because we're not hearing Nina Simone singing in Hebrew. Hold on a second. Let's try that over again. There we go. So that was Nina Simone singing in Hebrew. Pretty unbelievable. And not that easy to hear the recording. It's actually off of YouTube. You can see the video of it if you want to go check that out. It's called Eretz Zavat Ra'alav, and it's a very popular Israeli folk song. So this next clip that we're going to hear from Josh Kuhn, he tells us about a song called Where Can I Go by recording artist Marlena Shaw.
Where Can I Go was a song that was actually originally written by a Holocaust survivor, someone who had actually fought in the Warsaw Ghetto uprising. And it was a song that was written post-Holocaust about the search for a homeland, the kind of, you know, utopian desire for the land of Israel. And it's a song that was eventually translated into English and became a big hit in English among Jewish singers, international folk singers, but the lyrical content of it, this idea of can we get to a land where we can be free, really caught on with African Americans in the midst of the civil rights movement in the United States. And so the kind of Jewish desire for a land of freedom and equality was easily kind of translated into an African American one for a land of freedom and equality. So Ray Charles recorded it in a really beautiful version, and then ultimately this incredible version that we have in the exhibit and on the album by Shaw. I think, you know, she includes it on an album next to a number of other songs about liberation and about the politics of, you know, of equality. And it's just a striking example to me of how music can so easily be moved from one cultural context in history to another.
So we're going to hear Marlena Shaw singing Where Can I Go? Okay, so in this next clip, we're going to hear about a woman named Alberta Hunter. She's an amazing musician. And as we know, relationships between the two communities, the blacks and the Jews, were not perfect. And here, Josh Kuhn tells us a little bit about Alberta Hunter and some of her grievances with the Jewish community.
We include a song on the record by the great 1920s blues singer Alberta Hunter, but it's a song that Hunter recorded pretty late in her career, in her early 80s, and it was part of her comeback. And it's the song we know of it in English as "I Love You Much Too Much," but she sings it in Yiddish. There's not much that we know about why she did that. She claims she learned the song on a trip to Israel. I mean, when she appeared on the Dick Cavett show to sing the song for the first time, she kind of unraveled this great history of a kind of embittered exchange between blacks and Jews, where she talks about how many Jewish artists she thinks might have actually stolen material from black singers and black songwriters. So, you know, the last thing we want to do with the album and with the project is suggest this really rosy history of, you know, blacks just being inspired by Jews and Jews being inspired by blacks. That certainly happened quite a bit. But what also happened at the same time was, of course, a lot of inequality and a real kind of imbalance of power between the two groups. There was as much exploitation as there was exchange.
Alberta Hunter singing "Ich hab dich zu viel lieb."
Ich hab dich zu viel lieb. Ich tu auf dir kein Hass. Ich hab dir zu viel lieb. Sollt sein neuf dir in Kass. Ich hab dir zu viel lieb. Sollt sein neuf dir gebiet. An euch heiß, ich weiß, ich hab dich lieb. Habe dir mein Leben weggegeben, mein Herz und meine Schuhe mehr. Ich bin krank, mein Gedanke auch nicht für ne Kummer. Ich hab
dir zu viel lieb. Ich trüb dir gebes, Anna, ich heiß. Ich weiß, ich hab dich lieb. Habe dir mein Leben weggegeben, mein Herz und meine Schumme. Ich bin krank, mein Gedanke frage nicht für ne Kummer. Ich hab dich so viel lieb, so sein auf dir gebeist. Anna, ich heiß, ich weiß, ich hab dich lieb.
One of the biggest finds for the Idelsons Society that really inspired the Black Sabbath exhibit was a recording of Johnny Mathis singing the Kol Nidre prayer. So we're going to hear Josh Kuhn telling us a little bit about that.
We really were just kind of like, why was Johnny Mathis at the height of his popularity as a, you know, a romantic pop icon, recording a very heavy, culturally weighty Jewish song? And when we learned the story of him growing up in San Francisco and going to synagogue with his Jewish friends, stories of him learning Jewish songs from his Jewish vocal coach, and then eventually working with Jews at his record label who helped convince him to do an album of religious and spiritual music. It was just an incredible story that led us to track Johnny Mathis down, and we interviewed him about it. And actually, we made a short documentary that features those interviews that you can see, where Mathis talks about just how important Jewish music was to him in formulating his own style and his own kind of identity as a singer. So it was really a kind of a magical moment for us when we found him.
Wow. What I find so amazing is even to this day, there's a lot of prejudice in different communities. And the thought of so early on in history, Johnny Mathis going to his friend's synagogue with them just seems so unbelievable to me that happened. I guess that...
You know, I think that we are so accustomed to talking about racial inequality and difference precisely because it's been so prominent and precisely because it's been so damaging and violent that it's easy to be blinded to the fact that under the radar of that, throughout history, there have always been these little accidental or informal moments of interracial and cross-cultural exchange and friendship and influence that happen just in little kind of in little moments. And it's those moments that I think sometimes we need to return to and really dig for to start telling new histories on the one hand, but then also using those moments as kind of models for future exchange and future dialogue.
So this past year, we had a Kol Nidre special on Shtetl on the Shortwave, and I played the entire Johnny Mathis Kol Nidre song. It's very powerful and very beautiful. So I'm not going to play it again, but I'm going to play another song on the Black Sabbath compilation. And this one is a really fun one by Eartha Kitt.
Hevenu shalom, shalom, shalom aleichem. Hevenu shalom aleichem. Hevenu shalom aleichem. Hevenu shalom aleichem. Hevenu shalom, shalom, shalom aleichem. In France, they say, bonjour, monsieur. And Nasser sin I yisen peshakoda derem, that's Turkish. Buongiorno in Italia, guten tag in Svenska. Como está in España? In the good old Middle West, how do you do? And in the old, old Middle East, well...
You gotta love Eartha Kitt in the old Middle East. Anyways, in this last clip, we're going to hear about one of the ambassadors, the greatest ambassadors of Jewish music to Black audiences and to American audiences in general in the United States. His name is Paul Robeson, and Josh Kuhn is going to tell us a little bit about him.
One of the problems with doing any record like this is we have to leave out so much stuff. And so it's all about choices. One of the people we ended up not including on the record, unfortunately, you know, was the great singer and activist Paul Robeson. And Robeson was instrumental in bringing Jewish folk song, and particularly Jewish radical political folk song, into both mainstream audience circles, but also into African-American audiences. Part of the reason why he's not on the record is that he has been talked about so much, and his story is so well told. But he is a big part of the exhibit. So we've got about five of his songs in the exhibition, and his story is told in the exhibition. So what's nice about the exhibit is it allows us to really fill out and expand stories that we couldn't include on the album itself. But in the liner notes to the record, I have a quote from him, where a really wonderful quote, where he talks about just how well known it is that the Jewish people love Black music, but how little known it is just how much Black audiences love American Jewish song. And that really is the kind of theme for the album itself.
So that was the last clip for the Black Sabbath interview with Josh Kuhn of the Idelson Society. I really encourage you to go check out their website, idelsonsociety.com. Or if you're one of my many, many listeners in San Francisco, just go check out the Black Sabbath exhibit there. And I'm very excited to have Daniel Schachter in the studio right now. So we're going to come back after a little break and talk with him and hear a little bit more about his music. Before we do, we're going to end off with one last song from the Black Sabbath exhibit. There's so many. There's a beautiful song by Billie Holiday singing Yiddish Mama. There's tons, and I encourage you to look up this history, even to do some searching on YouTube or whatever. Look up Paul Robeson and hear some of the songs that he takes from workers in Eastern Europe and how he turns them into spiritual activist songs that apply to the American cultural context. It's really, really incredible. So we're going to end off with a little bit from The Temptations.
If I were a rich man, diddle diddle diddle, dig dig digga digga diddle diddle dum. All day long I'd biddy biddy bum. If I were a wealthy man, wouldn't have to work up. Diddle diddle diddle, dig dig digga 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 diddle dum.
Er hat sich die Städtel auf den Shortwave auf CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal.
right. We're back on Shtetl on the Shortwave on CKUT 90.3 FM. And we're going to be talking right now with Daniel Isaiah Schachter. Thank you so much for coming into the studio.
Thanks for inviting me.
Okay. And I don't know, Daniel, like, is your music very Jewish? Would you describe it as Jewish?
No, not really. It's just, I think there's probably some influence from years and years of going to a Jewish school and singing. We always sang after lunch. We would do the prayers, and there was always singing. There were singing classes, and some of that may have seeped into some of the music.
Okay, so this first song that we're going to hear is called The Hours, right?
Right.
Do you want to just set it up a little bit?
Well, yeah, this is the only song maybe on that I've done recently that was directly influenced by anything Jewish. The song starts off from a Judah Halevi poem. There's a famous Judah Halevi poem, "My heart's in the east, but I'm at the ends of the west." He lived in Spain, and he wanted to migrate to Israel. And I couldn't fit that whole line into the first line of the song. I wanted to use that whole line, but I changed it to "My heart's in the east, but the work is out west." I was thinking about all my Jewish friends going to Toronto and Los Angeles. So it's a riff on Halevi, maybe.
Okay, perfect. This is Daniel Isaiah Schachter, The Hours.
1, 2, 3, 4. It's in the east, but the work is out west. I'm sitting on the fence, trying to make sense of the hours. Every move is numbered to prove you cannot claim them. Might as well blame it on the hours. Help me along, send my song to the great big ear, ringing in the sun. I'm sounding my way out from the shadows with the melody meant like an arrow. Everyone tricks and everyone cheats, nobody wins when they go to swindle the hours. Hide under a rock or throw it at the clock. Steal that ticking. Who's that fixing the hours? Help me along. Lift my weary song to the great. After I slip into the spaces between the hours, help me along, drive my battle
song through the great big year, bleeding in the sun. I'm sounding my way out from the shadows with the melody meant like an arrow. Help me along, help me along.
So that was a sneak peek at The Hours by Daniel Isaiah Schachter. That's going to be coming out on an album soon, right?
Yeah, in May or June.
In May or June, so a really early sneak peek.
Yeah, the record's finished, but I have to wait for it to come out.
Okay, what label? What is it coming out on?
The label's Secret City Records.
Okay.
They're based in Montreal.
Who else do they produce?
Patrick Watson and Miracle Fortress and Plants and Animals, Badger Boulette. I think that's it.
Wow, that's not too shabby.
Yeah, yeah.
Pretty
they've
good.
Only been around a few years, but they've put out a lot of good records.
Okay. So you grew up in Montreal. May I ask how old you are?
I'm 31. I just turned 31.
Okay, happy birthday.
Thank you.
And so there's probably a lot of stuff happening. It is the end of the year, so we could do the end of the year wrap. There was the miners in Chile this year. There was so much happened, but I think we all know the number one top story is the demolition of the Cavendish Mall in Côte Saint-Luc.
Yeah. My mother sent me pictures. She sent me some JPEGs of the parking lot that the Cavendish Mall stood in, and it's been flattened.
Wow.
Yeah.
How does that make you feel?
I don't know. I used to go eat lunch there all the time. I went to Bialik High School. We'd have lunch in the Cavendish Mall, and I hung out with my grandmother a lot in the food court. But I think they're turning it in. They're going to make condominiums. We're going to build some condominiums.
Okay.
There was actually, the Cavendish Mall was, it fits in with Black Sabbath a little bit, because that was where the Bialik High School students and the Wager High School students, there'd be some interaction, some cross-cultural exchange.
Okay, so Wager is a public high school down the road from Bialik High School, which I, by the way, also went to.
Oh, okay.
And so it's the Jewish private high school versus the public high school?
Yeah, and there were black students in Wager, and there weren't too many, like, at least at the time when I was going to high school, there weren't too many black people in Côte Saint-Luc, but there were at Wager High School, and the Jewish kids and the black kids would hang out a bit.
So was it like, did you get along at the Cavendish Mall, or was it...
There was a bit of everything, but like some people got along. There was some, you know, some tension between the two schools, but mostly people got along.
Wow. Interesting. The Cavendish Mall, like I hope somebody did a history of it or like did a film about it before it went down, because a lot happened there, right? It is sort of like the Jewish community center, or was the Jewish community center of Côte Saint-Luc, right?
Yeah, for sure. I remember in 98 during the ice storm, it was a place that people congregated to because there was power there. And yeah, the Cavendish Mall. It's kind of a pathetic history, especially the last 20 years. Just a mall, though.
Why pathetic history? I guess it is, eh?
Well, it just really went downhill. There was like, you know, there used to be some nice stores in there. And then it sort of shrunk, and all the nice stores sort of closed up.
But I think, like you said, that you would hang out in the food court with your grandparents?
Yeah, I think it was the Picnic. A restaurant called Picnic, like a pizza joint. My grandmother would hang out there a lot. A lot of old people hung out there. Côte Saint-Luc, at least like 10 years ago, maybe 5-10 years ago, there was like, I read that it was the oldest community in Canada, like in terms of the age group of the people living there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And if you like would go with an audio recorder to the Cavendish Mall, you could get a whole history of the Jewish community, because there were so many older people that ended up just hanging out there. That's the main thing that I know about the Cavendish Mall, is people hanging out in the food court and just chatting. It's a free place to sit around and congregate.
Yeah.
I guess that's probably why it had to close in the end.
You could still sit on Santa's lap there, though. He used to come every Christmas.
Uh-huh. So did you enjoy going to Bialik High School, a private Jewish high school in Montreal?
No, not really. But I don't know if I would have been happier in a public school.
Okay, so it was just like high school was not a good time.
Yeah, I think so.
And so did you feel like you were living in a real bubble? Because did you grow up in Côte Saint-Luc?
Well, I went to school there, but I lived in the neighboring, in Montreal West, right next to it. So it was a little bit different. But yeah, it's just, I had this like suburban Jewish upbringing. It was boring. sometimes I wonder, well, my parents grew up in the Mile End, you know, my mom on Jean Mals and my dad on St. Urbain. I think that must have been a more exciting way to grow up than in Côte Saint-Luc in the suburbs.
Mm-hmm. So when you left Bialik and you got out into the real world, what was that like for you? Was it like a shock to the system, always having grown up mostly around Jewish kids and Jewish subject matter? What was it like for you when you left that environment?
I went to Dawson College, that CHEP, and I don't know if it was a shock, but it was nice. It was a breath of fresh air. The world opened up. I remember in sixth grade when we graduated from Solomon Schechter, when the vice principal of the school was a rabbi, he gave this speech about intermarriage being the biggest threat to Judaism. And I don't know, maybe it's true, but I was sitting there with my mother, and I think my stepfather was there too, who's not Jewish.
Okay.
My parents both intermarried, although my father's second wife converted. But that was the kind of community I grew up in, you know. Intermarriage was frowned upon.
It's interesting that they intermarried. And, you know, maybe like other people in the community who are more like deeply involved in the community wouldn't even have intermarried.
Yeah, for sure. I know some kids my age whose parents who like they would date non-Jewish girls, and their parents would just, you know, give an ultimatum, you know, we'll cut you off. But I think that's rare, but that it still happens.
Wow. Okay. So do you see any value in your experience, like in your youth and growing up and in, let's say, the Jewish education that you got? Was there anything positive about it?
Sure. Definitely the literature and the music.
Like, for example, this Yehuda Halevi poem that you included in your song, or a part of it. This was something that you learned about from going to Bialik, learning about, like...
Probably. But also I really like the Montreal Jewish literature, you know, like that appeared in the 40s and 50s. All those good poets, Montreal Jewish poets.
Okay, and how do you feel about the art scene in Montreal today? Do you think there's like a rich Jewish art scene here?
I don't know where it is. I mean, maybe there's something going on somewhere. I'm not, I don't know of any Jewish arts scene happening here at all. And I think it's because, I think a lot of it has to do with just people leaving the urban centers and going out into the suburbs. And I don't know if any kind of interesting art can happen in those places, in Hampstead and Côte Saint-Luc. It's not a priority. We never had any arts classes in school. I think there was one arts and crafts electives you could take, but there wasn't any encouragement to pursue an artistic career or anything.
The emphasis was purely on academics, mostly.
Yeah, math and science. Hmm. The school always did. I remember Bialik always like finished number one in math in the country in those tests, but there weren't any arts classes.
But how did they rate on the students in indie pop folk rock?
I think they do have some music there now, but none when I was there.
Okay, before we, like, I want to chat a tiny bit more, but we're running out of time, so I want people to get to hear more of your music, which is so beautiful. This next song that we're going to hear is, can you want to tell us a little bit about it?
We're going to listen to Land of the Sun?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it could be about two different things. I thought either it was about the breakup of a relationship, and I thought it could also be about... I thought Land of the Sun could be Israel too, actually, sometimes. But I don't know, you can have a listen and decide.
Okay, take a listen. Daniel Isaiah Schachter. To the land where I'll grow old.
not my truth to hitch my star to a wagon and carry it over a mountain.
So that was a really, really beautiful song by Daniel Isaiah Schachter, and I'm very much looking forward to your album coming out this spring or summer.
Yeah, we'll see.
What do you mean, we'll see?
Well, no, we'll see. We'll see if it comes out in the spring or the summer.
Okay, sometimes these things don't go as planned.
Yeah, but I think it will. I think it'll come out in May or June.
Okay, and we were just during the break here while we were listening to your song, we were talking about the Jewish art scene in Montreal, and I think... I don't know, like you were saying that you don't know of much going on and that there's not much really happening. And I guess when you think back on like, you know, Mordecai Richler or some of the different stuff that was going on in the past, it doesn't seem as alive now.
For sure.
But I think there is stuff going on.
Well, you got to tell me about it.
I will. You got to tune into Shtetl on the Shortwave.
I should. This is my first time hearing the show and just sitting here listening to the first half. It was so cool. It was such beautiful music.
Cool. I guess what I'm curious to ask you is, do you know a lot of Jewish people who are making art, even if the art doesn't have anything Jewish inherent in it, like there's nothing Jewish about it? Do you know a lot of Jews, young Jewish people in Montreal who are producing music and other types of art?
No, I don't know too many.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
But if I thought about it, I'm sure I'd come up with some names. I mean, my neighbor, you know, Josh Dolgan.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I guess you do.
Yeah, of course I do. Because, like, first of all, his music is not only... I mean, he also produces music that has, like, some Jewish content as well.
Yeah.
But, like, what about you? There's probably a lot of people out there like you who are Jewish and making music and making film and who just don't... They don't wear, like, the Star of David on their product, you know?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. There's not too many filmmakers here either, like, English filmmakers living in Montreal.
You know, I gotta beg to differ on that one, too.
Maybe there's a lot of documentary filmmakers, but I don't know too many people, like, writing scripts and producing movies. I know, like, a handful of people, and I must know almost all of them. There's not too many.
Okay, because actually that's true, right? You're also a filmmaker as
well.
Okay, what was the last film that you made or...
Well, I've written a couple of scripts recently that haven't been produced, but I made a short film. It's been 2 years now, but it was called Three Mothers, and I really want to make a feature film. I really want. That's the next thing.
The next thing.
Yeah.
We're definitely running out of time, so I want to ask you one last question before we go out with a tiny little bit of Anita on the Banks.
Yeah, that's it.
How did you get into doing music at the level that you're doing it? You played at Oceaga this summer. You're coming out with a new album. How does this happen for a Montrealer?
I just being around long enough. I mean, like you mentioned, I think at the beginning of the show, like up and coming musician, Daniel Schachter, but I've been doing it for like years.
Okay. Okay. Sorry.
No, that's fine. It's fine. Just
You've been around on the scene for a long time.
Yeah, I've been playing shows for like almost 10 years.
Almost 10 years. Wow. So you started when you were 21.
Yeah, I mean, even younger. I remember we'd do shows where we were under 18 and we'd do some shows. We did a show, I remember, at Cafe Campus on Prince Arthur, and none of our friends could get in. The promoter assured us that he would get all of our friends in, and like none of them got in. There are like 60 people left behind.
Wow. Okay, Daniel, I hope you'll come back when your album comes out and we can hear more music and hear the new stuff off the album. It sounds really beautiful. So thank you so much for coming on to Shtetl.
Thank you very much.
And Daniel has signed an agreement in writing, and it's in front of Lainey Bassman, who's teching the show today.
This is not true.
He's going to be the new tech for Shtetl because, sadly, Katie can't do it anymore. Katie Moore is not able to continue teching, and she did it all year and did a really wonderful job. So thank you so much, Daniel, for agreeing to take over her spot.
To be discussed.
Okay, fine, to be discussed. All right, coming up next is Butcher T's Noontime Cuts, amazing music. Thank you for tuning into Shtetl. If you want to hear this show or any of the other shows that you might have missed this year, you can go to shtetlmontreal.com. This is Daniel Isaiah Schachter, Anita on the Banks.
The nights were an agony of heat that crawled in our rooms, in our bodies, in our sleep. I jumped from my dreams, I scrambled and screamed, let me out of my skin, and I started to spin. I burned for the breeze, I turned to the sea, but was never appeased. Anita, she stepped on the banks, drew me under the water, and laughed when I thanked her. Don't you be so polite. She kissed me and fled. I followed her go with my eyes. I turned back to the shoreline with the sun on the rise, and I sang down in the sand, all washed in red. And my soul was rudely stirred by the notes on the water that I heard, a yawning melody lifting itself from the sea. That morning I caught the first one straight out of town. I knew you were waiting for me, but I needed to be on my own. I just couldn't keep it up, carrying your cup through the pathways of blame. Shackled and shamed, I would feel my I saw how they stood so incredibly high. I couldn't reach for that. No, I wouldn't even try. So I spun a little song. I don't know where it went, but it flew from my tongue and the pain, it was gone. That black symphony. Would you come back and show me how to sing your body to bliss? Whisper memory of a kiss on the banks where the moment was.